Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hello, I'm Tim Hewell. And before you listen to the documentary from the BBC World Service, I'd like to tell you about a slogan and a land, where I explore a land, a conflict, and a slogan that divide many opinions around the world.
I would consider putting on personal protection gear.
Bulletproof vest.
Yeah, just in case.
I journey across the contested region, referred to in the equally contested slogan, from the river to the sea, 90 kilometres from the River Jordan to the Mediterranean. You lay down in front of the tractor. Weren't you scared?
No.
He don't scared. I will die just one time.
In a two-part documentary, I'll cross the occupied West Bank and Israel, hearing from both sides in this dispute and finding out what it means to live here.
We know that they want to kill us, that they want this country or this land.
But with such fierce divisions, can there ever be a peaceful resolution? To hear a slogan and a land, scroll back in this podcast to the 17th of July.
This is the BBC World Service. The programme that follows contains strong language from the start and reflects attitudes of the time.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Wanda Gannett, and this is The Gay Activist Who Won an Olympic-Sized Battle.
Take me to Atlanta, where the peach trees grow. Take me to Atlanta, down in Georgia Road.
When I was selected to compete at the Atlanta Olympics, it was a dream come true.
There you have it. The announcement is in. Atlanta, Georgia will be the site of the 1996 Summer Olympics. What a tremendous moment.
But instead of the Olympic ideals of excellence, respect, and friendship, the lead up to the games was dominated by hate, discrimination, and bigotry.
9 p.m.
You don't deserve to live. You brought disease and pestilence to an otherwise straight and normal heterosexual society.
I recognize you bunch of queers and perverts. That's all you are.
Yeah, the sooner all you homo sickos drop dead from AIDS, the better off the rest of us are going to be.
End of message. Message discarded.
But just north of Atlanta, in neighboring Cobb County, where the volleyball competition was taking place, there was nothing like a warm welcome for athletes like me, who identify as gay.
I have homosexual family members, homosexuals in my church that I dearly love, but I cannot and will not embrace their lifestyle.
Neo-Nazis, we say no! Homophobia's got to go!
Southern stupid backwater, and that's what's happening in Cobb County again, and I'm ashamed of it.
If you don't feel safe in your home and you can't sleep at night, that's not sustainable. After a couple months of that, we just didn't feel safe in our home anymore, and we moved.
They have called me a Nazi, a fascist, a bigot, a censor, a homophobe, and many other adjectives.
This is definitely not the end of this debate.
Yeah, far from it, right, Louie?
Not at all.
I'm Wanda Gannett, member of the 1996 Canadian volleyball team, and I identify as gay. And this is a story of how a small group of campaigners took on one of the most powerful organizations in the world to fight to get the Olympics out of Cobb.
Take me to Atlanta, further down the line.
The year of 61, when the Civil War begun, and 6 days was called.
To understand the present, you have to know the past. And the history of Cobb County is checkered, to say the least. Cobb County's seat of government is the city of Marietta, a Confederate stronghold in the American Civil War, and the scene of lynchings in the early 20th century.
Cobb County is across the Chattahoochee River from Atlanta.
John Greaves lived in Cobb County in the early 90s.
To some extent, part of the what was called the White Flight Counties when the 1964 Civil Rights Act was passed and when there was pushes for school desegregation later, there were suburbs here in the city of Atlanta that were almost entirely white, and people who didn't want their children going to a desegregated school moved. Cobb County had very conservative politically and to some extent far-right extremist conservatism. It was the home of Lester Maddox. He was a white supremacist member of the Klan who ran for governor at one time, and I believe his platform in his gubernatorial campaign was vote for me, I'm not a N-word, something like that. And J.B. Stoner lived there. He was a convicted bomber, bombed a black church, a Bethel Baptist Church in Birmingham. Wasn't convicted of that, though, until the 1970s, and suspected in bombings of other churches, black churches, and also Jewish synagogues, including the suspected of bombing the temple in Atlanta, which is depicted in a movie, Driving with Miss Daisy.
By the 1990s, progress had been made, but stereotypes lingered. What better way to dispel them than by hosting the Olympics? Lynn May was the director of media relations, domestic, for the 96 Games.
People who seek to have the Games think that it's going to benefit their city, and they want their city to be an international city, and I think that was part of the goal. But that small committee was so effective in campaigning, so that was one thing. And then we had a branding asset that was global, Coca-Cola. So between Coca-Cola and this small group of really hardworking Atlanta leaders, to everyone's surprise, Atlanta ended up being a bona fide candidate. So that's how it began. And the IOC was not thrilled about us from the beginning.
The International Olympic Committee has awarded the 1996 Olympic Games to the city of Atlanta.
I think there was disappointment that it wasn't Athens, because from a public relations standpoint, that would have just been so perfect, you know, in pieces like bookends. I also think that there is bias against Americans at so many levels in the world. And I think the American South is often seen to be uncivilized or less civilized. And the idea of the South being extremely racist, because that, in fact, is its history. So I think if you add those kinds of things, I think the IOC had an image of a much more sophisticated venue for the Games. So I think that there was, now let me rephrase that. I know that the IOC was not thrilled that it was Atlanta from the beginning. And in truth, that affected the relationship the Atlanta Olympic Committee had with the IOC from the beginning to the end.
So, time to dispel the fears and show progress. Cobb County resident John Greaves was part of that change in the early 1990s.
I was appointed to the Cobb County Community Relations Council by a Republican county commissioner. He and I talked, and I told him I was gay, and he said, oh, we don't have an open gay person on the County Community Relations Commission. So you had conservatives who were not racist or homophobic conservatives, and then the other end of the spectrum, you had organized hate groups that wanted to get rid of gay people, wanted to get rid of black people, and so it was an interesting and could be scary place.
America was changing too.
America, this day marks the return from exile of the gay and lesbian people. We are banished no more.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The issue is whether men and women who can and have served with real distinction should be excluded from military service solely on the basis of their status. And I believe they should not.
Look around you. It's America. We've come to Washington to show everyone else that we're here. We're queer. And we're not going anywhere.
In Atlanta, the city agreed to give the same rights to same-sex partners as it gave to all its municipal workers. The South was changing. But it was also a very difficult time as the AIDS epidemic hit hard.
A mystery disease known as the gay plague has become an epidemic unprecedented in the history of American medicine. That today from the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, topping the list of likely victims are male homosexuals who have many partners and drug users who inject themselves with needles. Medical experts say the disease kills 4 out of every 10 people it strikes and that it threatens to explode in the nation's cities.
Against the backdrop of AIDS and gay rights progress, Cobb County's legislative body, the Board of Commissioners, and its chair, Gordon Wison, made a stand.
What really got him started, he said, were events in Atlanta and Washington.
In Washington, there was the Gay Rights March. The other event was the domestic partners debate in Atlanta. It passed, giving homosexual partners of city workers the same benefits as heterosexual marriage partners. The Cobb's vote, he says, will send a message to legislators.
The commission brought forward 2 resolutions. One was to cut all funding for the arts. The other condemned what it called the homosexual lifestyle as incompatible with the standards to which this community subscribes. John Greaves created a protest group to campaign.
I felt a responsibility that I had to speak up about that, and I did at our Community Relations Council meeting. But I also began calling the commissioners in their offices and to tell them this is a bad idea, you shouldn't do that. I felt compelled to be responsible and to fight against it. I reserved a corporate name, the Cobb Citizens Coalition, so we could use tax-exempt money to raise funds and have an organization. Sometimes we did things with smoke and mirrors. And forming a group and calling it the Cobb Citizens Coalition, first of all, I used the word citizens in it to make sure that people knew we were citizens. And it gave the impression that there might be, who knows how many people, a lot of people behind this. And we did draw some people to it, but it put a huge strain on me and took a lot of time, and I was tired all the time.
But this measured, reasoned, and thoughtful protest ultimately failed. The resolution passed 4-1.
From Georgia's news leader, WSB-TV Atlanta, this is Channel 2 Action News at 6.
Today, Cobb County is taking a giant step backwards. Backwards into a time when a small select group of individuals controlled what citizens saw, heard, and read.
2 men having sex is not a normal sex act. 2 women having sex.
That opinion wins out in Cobb County, where commissioners vote to condemn the gay lifestyle.
It doesn't ban gays from living or working in Cobb County. It simply says Cobb's government doesn't support them.
Commissioner Wysong told me he believes the whole issue will now go away, but apparently it will not.
This is definitely not the end of this debate.
Yeah, far from it, right, Louie?
Not at all.
Okay, thanks.
We are in Glover Park, which is the heart of Marietta Square. We are just across the street from the Cobb County Commission building where the
Cobb County resident Carol Brown would play her part by documenting the fight against the resolution.
There were rallies held here in the square, both pro and con.
It was a shocking and frightening time for the gay community of Cobb County.
It outraged me because I don't know what gay lifestyle they were talking about. I was a business owner, a homeowner and taxpayer, a reliable voter. You know, I had broken no laws. My lifestyle was mostly running my business and taking care of my home and my hobby, which was I had a private pilot's license and would go up and fly with my friends on weekends. What kind of a lifestyle? And my friends were straight. So, yeah, we're professional people, respectable professional people. What lifestyle are they talking about that they're trying to demean and defame us? And I drove back to my office in Buckhead later that day, absolutely in shock. I remember going in and sitting down at my desk, and I was just frozen. It was deeply traumatic, I think, for all of us that were involved in it. You're just demonized for no reason other than pure, ugly politics.
The consequences were particularly bad for those openly gay in public life, like John Greaves.
When a body passes a thing and says, we believe that the homosexual lifestyle is bad, and you know, these people aren't welcome in our county, it, to some extent, gives permission to these hate groups that we knew were there, and some of them violent hate groups. It's like a wink and a nod. Okay, you can go ahead and go after these people. We've officially said that they're not like the rest of us. They're not as good as the rest of us. In those days, they had public phone books, everybody's name and address, and we began receiving harassing and threatening calls at home. Somebody sent hate mail to my employers. We went for about 2 months with the violent threats and the harassment. We'd called and reported them to police. The police set up taps on our phone with our permission, and they found some of the people who were harassing us, and harassment wasn't against the law. They had a talk with them, and we pretend to feel unsafe in our home. So what really made us feel unsafe was a woman officer came, and she let us know she was a lesbian, which was nice. And then she said, let me show you how to check your car before you get in it each time to be sure you're looking for signs that somebody may have tampered with it in case there could be a bomb, which was not reassuring. And we did. We would go around our car and look underneath and look for anything that looked unusual every time we got in our car. You know, if you don't feel safe in your home and you can't sleep at night, you really can't. That's not sustainable. After a couple months of that, we just didn't feel safe in our home anymore, and we moved.
The Olympics were less than 3 years away, but this issue really wasn't a priority for those organizing the games. Lynn May was their director of media relations.
When the Cobb County Board of Commissions passed the ordinance, it was mentioned. It was one thing that happened in a sea of other things that were going on, too. Inside the Olympic Committee, we're focused on trying to get these venues in place. I don't think anybody within the Olympic Committee was that focused on it. For me, in that moment, in that time, imagine somebody with plate spinning on the inside. I'm spinning plates. I go to another plate.
So as it stood, I'd be competing in a place that had made it clear just how unwelcome gay athletes like me would be. The campaign in Cobb County seemed lost, but the ripple effects were making their way down I-75. Arriving in Atlanta in 1994, step forward two Atlanta residents, John Ivan Weaver and Pat Hussein.
I was pissed. I really felt so incensed about this thing. And Rory Vaknin said, you need to meet Pat Hussein.
You talked about the Olympics and the resolution that was in Cobb County. And I asked him, what do you want to do? He said, I don't know, but I'm pissed. And I had been known for years as a pissed off black dyke from Georgia. So it resonated. And I said, well, that's a good start. We can talk.
It was one of those things that just hit me. I was pissed off. Totally pissed off about being attacked again. I was so naive about everything. Naive about the Olympics. I had this idea we came together in peace and harmony for 17 days. That's bull. It's money and politics. And I learned the hard way. But you said, if someone doesn't like what we're doing, they can kiss our multicultural, multiracial, you know what's. Yeah. And it was true. Visually and culturally and everything, you and I were a good image for the media, for other people, a black pissed off dyke from Georgia and a white, inexperienced man, boy, whatever he was, from Tennessee. And another thing for me, I was naive. I didn't know we were not supposed to win. I had no idea why don't we win. And I told myself, if I stand up, I win. They may beat the crap out of me. They may knock me down, but I win by saying this is wrong.
We brought together, for the first time in years, John Ivan and Pat, who alongside their life partners, Diego and Cherry, formed the Olympics Out of Cobb Movement.
I thought I would find an organization that would be willing to take it on, sure, and I would help. And I was told, Pat, it's the Olympics. It's the Olympics. It's impossible. I never knew we chose our fights by what were winnable. And I couldn't understand how some people look at it as nothing. And that's just how it is. I didn't know whether we were going to be successful or not.
Sure.
I knew we had to fight. Resistance is how change starts, saying, no, we're not going to take this and do it the best way we can. We both had it that we were together, however this ended.
I'm totally connected with you. And I've been told no by so many people. I was afraid of them. But you, I felt very secure with. I learned so much by being next to you. You never told me what to say or what to do. We just did it. And we went at it so fast and furious. We didn't stop. And Cherry knows that, and Diego knows that. And for everything I think that you and I were doing in the foreground, Cherry and Diego were doing things in the background.
You're right. And Cherry and I had a long talk because I had just spent almost a year in D.C. completing the March on Washington. When I walked back in the door, I said, Cherry, I'm going to rest. I'm going to stop. I promise. And then I talked to you. And so I came home and I told Cherry, I've met this man, John Ivan Weaver.
A white man.
A white man I don't know. All I know is that he's right. They can't have the resolution and the game. Something's going to go. She asked me what I thought about you. I said, I really like him. He's never done activism like this before. And I just don't know. I've been betrayed so many times by white men to get start one way and then it shifts to something else. And we can only see by going into it. And Cherry told me, well, if he deserts you, I'm going to reach in his chest and pull his heart out while he watches.
And I knew that she would.
They got ready for a fight.
For some reason, there was a John Weaver, J-O-N Weaver, that was a hairdresser in Cobb County. So I was concerned about him. And I even called him at his hair studio and told him my name was John Weaver, too. And I did not live in Cobb County, but he did. And I said, I have a middle name, Ida. I'm going to start saying John Ivan Weaver. That is my name. I didn't want anything to happen to him. It was a complicated thing, simple but complicated. When I started the first meeting I went to, when I went in, I told myself, these people don't know how shy you are. They don't know you. And so at that point, I decided that John Weaver, J-O-N, was staying behind and John Ivan was moving forward. John Weaver was not going to be doubtful. He was not going to hold this back. And John Ivan was moving forward. And that's where that came from. And so I used different things for strength. I would think of someone who had been treating me badly or done something horrible to me for being gay or for being sissy or being weird or being this. And I would use that, not in anger, but in strength.
Well, we had the pact with each other that if no one else would support this, that they would keep arresting both of us over and over throughout the Olympics, still protesting because they were wrong. And they had the chance to back out gracefully. They were changing venues all the time. We were willing to walk away, just get out of Cobb. And they basically told us to go to hell. That was it, to get out of Cobb or get rid of the resolution. But they, of course, they said that they weren't politicians. They had nothing to do with that. But these were their homeboys, and they could talk to them. And I'm still surprised that the nation or the world didn't react any stronger to the fact that you're willing to possibly give up a once-in-a-lifetime, multi-million-dollar Olympic venue because you hate us so much. It made a louder statement than the resolution ever did.
The biggest thing for us, we had a focus. And the focus was getting the Olympics out of Cobb. That resolution was there. And then we had another focus, too, which was Billy Payne. He was the head of the Olympic Committee. We held him accountable to do the right thing. We just kept on them.
With help from the gay community, they mounted a colorful, boisterous, and unmistakably loud protest.
In March 1994, as the design for the Olympic cauldron was unveiled, they made their move.
We were never threatening. We wanted to let people know. We were raising the alarm about the danger of taking the games into Cobb County, but not to intimidate people. Some of our ideas came from our meetings, and we would brainstorm with people that was there. That's how we sent two white men into their unveiling of the cauldron. This man was there that had designed it, and he was talking about it, and they were very nice to him. They waited till he finished. One of the men that went in there had been a doctor, and what was Ed?
The Symphony Orchestra.
Symphony Orchestra. Who would question them? But they had brought in a banner. And when they jumped up on the stage after he finished talking, nobody was ready. Security, nothing. It was hilarious.
When they came into a news conference carrying an Olympics out of Cobb flag, my boss, Dick, is at the front of the room. I'm in the back of the room. And I saw them go past me. I see the flag, the banner unfurled. And I remember thinking, this isn't good. And then I saw Dick move toward them. And I thought, this is really not good. And I remember sitting there. I had a wild moment that I thought maybe I should jump up and tackle him. And I thought, that really wouldn't be good. I knew that day that we had a problem that was bigger than a bread box. I don't think anybody within the Olympic Committee was that focused on it until Olympics out of Cobb began making noise about it. So, you know, sometimes you have to hear a loud bang before it gets your attention. That's essentially what happened with this. But once we heard that loud bang, wow.
And that was just the start.
May 1994, the International Olympic Committee was coming to Atlanta to see how Atlanta was preparing for the Games. And one of the Cobb County commissioners who signed that resolution was going to be in Atlanta Braves baseball game, throwing out the first ball. So we went to Cobb County at rush hour, and it had been prearranged. We put pink triangles on top of our car, and we had someone alerting the news media. So for 6 o'clock news, was slowing down traffic.
We were driving the speed limit into Atlanta.
The legal speed limit.
What? Other people wanted to drive faster. We didn't.
The John had to do 5 miles over because they said, there's a fast lane.
And they pulled me over.
You took that ticket, John.
Yeah, I did get a ticket. I got a ticket for impeding the flow of traffic, and I had to go pay it in cash in Cobb County. I had to go pay the ticket. What happened was we were going slow, and I was in the far left-hand lane, and they forced me to get over and told me to speed up. And I started to like, no, we came here with slow traffic, so I moved back over into the left-hand lane and blocked it again. Boy, they were pissed. Then two cars forced me off the road all across the way, and then I got pulled over, and the thing, my knees were knocking, because you had warned me. You said, John, when you're out there picketing, and you go around the corner of a building or something, and you just get dragged off from somewhere, and then later, he fell down. He hit his head. And this idea in Cobb County when the traffic slowed down, when I got pulled over, when the policeman came to the car, he was very angry. Stereotypical Southern redneck police person. And he said, driver's license, proof of insurance. I was so nervous, I couldn't open the glove compartment. And I finally got open and found those things. He went away, came back. And when he came back, and then, but fortunately, I had a journalist from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He looked in the car finally, and he saw someone else in the car. Kathy leaned over and showed him her IDs. And he calmed down after that. He was a lot more polite. His demeanor toward me changed completely. Yes, sir, Mr. Weaver. This Mr. Weaver.
And then we pulled back out in the road and stopped it again. You know, sometimes when you put something under pressure, you get dust. But sometimes you get a diamond. And you, my friend, my love, or a diamond.
And then a gift in the form of the Atlanta Olympic mascot, Izzy, something of a pet project of Billy Payne, chairman of the organizing committee.
I-Z-Z-Y.
And then we put Izzy in a Google Splash.
And you, Diego drew that poster, that little flyer we have for Izzy a bigot. Diego's the one who made that.
Is he gay? Is he straight? Is he sick at Cobb County? Is he a bigot? And the thing is, Billy Payne loved that little thing.
And overnight, Izzy became apparent that we made up a song. We made up a song for him. And Billy Payne said, y'all don't talk about Izzy. Y'all don't talk about Izzy. Give us 24 hours and we'll talk to you. Don't talk about Izzy.
We knew that. Push the Izzy button. Got him.
Billy Payne, do your job. Get the Olympics out of Cobb. These are called the Redneck Games. He hated that one. And we knew that when we had him, so I remember you said one time, when we did the T-shirt thing, you know, is he a big, is he gay, is he straight? You saw the reaction of Shorts, but you nudged me, and we knew we had them.
The campaign was heading into its 6th month and taking a toll. But John Ivan and Pat found strength in each other and their partners, Diego and First Cherry.
It was a hard job being bodyguard for both of y'all, you know? You have to be aware of everything. I know her movements, you know. I'm not picking on you, but you have to. And being with John and being with my wife, for one, I had to be the bodyguard because no one else was. Same with John. I had to watch him, too. And I worked a full-time job. My hours were from anywhere to 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm getting off coming home. And if my wife was active before I had to go to work, I had to be there. It even affect me at work because I'm like, who is that? You know, what are you doing? I swear, Diego, I promise you, I was taking very good care of both of them.
I know you were. And I tell you, I was watching out for John too, but I wasn't as imposing as you were. I wasn't as formidable, doing my best.
Diego and I got a little bit of hate mail. We got some bad phone calls. And he was worried about me. And I said, Diego, I said, if anything ever happens to me, I said, you put my head on a stick. I said, they don't want to make a martyr out of it. Put my head on a stick and parade it around, whatever it takes. And it was just one of those things that he tried to protect me. I know you didn't. I know you were protecting Pat. Mm-hmm. You were so careful with her. And it's just the whole thing. I know when I used to call your house in the beginning, Nikki used to answer the telephone. And Nikki would, I hear Nikki, Pat, it's that white man calling here again. But she was protecting the family. You know, that's what I got. She loved you. She didn't know who I was, what I was going to do, but she finally stopped doing that. But she said, Pat, it's that white man calling here again for you. But I just was like, nothing's going to stop me. I have to go on with this.
They were giving it their all, but time was running out.
We were going so fast and so hard. I don't know how you did it, Pat. And it was just like, it was very intense.
Well, we knew we had no time knowing what the deadline was. We knew there was a drop dead date where they weren't moving anything. It was going to be there too bad.
Because people would tell me, oh, we have time. They have 2 years. We didn't have 2 years.
The game starts in 2 years.
3 months. Yeah. And those things have to be finalized. And we knew that.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back, and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else have we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about Unexpected Science History.
Well, that's unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
With less than 2 years to go, the games would still take place in Cobb County. I'd be chasing my Olympic dream in a place that openly hated me. But now, a legendary Olympian was about to dive into the issue.
Take me to Atlanta, further down the line.
Greg Louganis won his first Olympic medal at just 16 years of age. He went on to win double Olympic gold twice. At the 88 Games in Seoul, he made headlines when he smashed his head on the diving board. Dazed and confused,
he managed to compose himself and go on to win yet another gold medal.
While the most courageous performance of the Games has come from Greg Louganis, after cracking his head open on the springboard yesterday, the American came right back to take the gold medal.
Greg's Olympic success propelled his fame way beyond the pool. After retiring, he was free to explore new opportunities. He went into acting. In turn, he discovered new things about himself. In 1994, there were few openly gay athletes, retired or active. He'd only spoken about his sexuality once before. Coming out was a brave decision, and the Olympic movement wanted to recognize that.
It was at an Olympic festival, you know, so lots of athletes, you know, and lots of officials and all that stuff. There were probably close to 1,000 people. I don't know. There was a lot of people in the banquet hall for, you know, this brunch or whatever. And so they introduced me, the recipient of the Robert J. Cain Award. Standing ovation. It was crazy. It was really, really sweet. And then, you know, I commended the U.S. Olympic Committee for recognizing an openly gay athlete, and also encouraged the Olympic Committee to do the right thing, to remove the Olympics out of Cobb County because they had anti-gay legislation, and I wanted all of the athletes to feel welcome. You know, that's what the Olympics is supposed to be about. Inclusion, about, you know, setting your arms down, letting go of the politics and all that stuff, and celebrate humanity. And so when I finished, I got my award, and I finished my speech, there was polite applauding. It was like, oh my. And then I went back to my table, and I was met by Jackie Joyner, and Jackie gives me a high five, and she's just laughing. You know, it's like, that was not a comfortable role for me to give that speech. You know, I was in many ways trying to get my footing. You know, it's like, who am I in this whole picture? Who am I? Just this, you know, diver guy, you know? But, you know, I will speak up and I'll speak my mind. A lot of big corporations, or, you know, the IOC, the U.S. Olympic Committee, if you don't create too much noise and don't bring too much attention to it, then maybe we can ignore it kind of thing. I mean, that's kind of the attitude.
At last, the IOC sat up. Lynn May was the media director for ACOG, the organizing committee.
I was first aware of the IOC related, and this would be, again, going back to Greg Louganis, a gay Olympian. And remember, this was at a time when coming out, even if you're as famous as he was, it has to be a heart-stopping experience. There were athletes who were aware of what was going on here and were opposed to it. I think they were exerting pressure on the IOC. So I think it came that route. International gay and lesbian athletes elevated it to a global story. I don't know that the IOC thought anything very much about the venue or the issue. I don't know what their position was on gay and lesbian issues at the time. So I only knew about it from that perspective, that there were athletes who said, wait a minute, this is time. It's time for us to take a stand on this.
Enter former Atlanta mayor and managing director of ACOG, Shirley Franklin.
Shirley Franklin is an extraordinary American politician. She is a politician in the very best sense of the word.
Here's Lynn May again.
I have admired her in every job we have ever been part of together. She is smart, she's intuitive, and she's got courage. And there would be times when Shirley would come into my office and she would say, she'd love it if she hears this interview, you know what I did this afternoon? Mind you, we were all working 16, 18 hours. She said, I went to a matinee. So she was smart enough to know to take care of herself. And sometimes it was so chaotic in our workplace. And Shirley, she's a big deal there. She's a managing director. It's like, oh, is Shirley in the meeting? No. It's like, she's on a matinee. So she had the wisdom to look after herself. But if we were going to war, I would want her in my foxhole. You can count on what she says and her ability to get things done. So it has been my privilege to work in the same environment with her. And she was key with Olympics out of Cobb. First of all, we were sympathetic to what they were doing. We represented corporate America. We are women of color. We are oppressed peoples. So you are walking that fine line of doing your job and representing your company's interests, but you also, again, you have that ethical core. What do you think is the right thing here? So she embodies that, you know, for me. And so, you know, it was a pleasure to have her at the other end of this dicey stick.
ACOG reached out to Pat and John Ivan for a meeting.
She wanted us to go in their building, and we didn't want to be on their property. You get us in that building, we don't know what happens. Let's say I come from a community, from reading, from meeting people. There's so many things that happen because you walk through the wrong door. And there is a surrender of power in going there. Not only are there realities of things that could happen, but there's the perception of who has been summoned to this meeting. And we were not going to be summoned. The psychological piece sometimes is more important than the actuality. But I have a friend who was a secretary to Mrs. King, and he got us a place at the King Center for the initial meeting. And lead them to wonder how we got a room in that center.
Pat, you were so wonderful with your connections. Oh, my God. It made such a difference because we looked a lot stronger than we were. The things I learned standing beside you, it's so precious.
And so the first of what turned out to be several meetings was held at Martin Luther King Center in Atlanta.
Shirley gave advice, and Shirley had her ear to the ground. And the Olympics out of Cobb people trusted Shirley. And again, when I say trust, you put it in the context that one of the aspects of the members of Olympics out of Cobb that was charming but irritating is that, you know how we can just demonize the other so easily. Again, I'm in makeup and high heels, and Shirley is too. We look corporate, for heaven's sakes. We are not necessarily trustworthy looking to people who are dressed differently and, you know, who are carrying their flags. You know, we look like the enemy. We're dressed like the enemy. So I think there's always that element of caution and care on both sides. But they still trusted her, and both sides trusted her, and I think that's the important thing, with whatever cautions they had. Shirley brought a different perspective to the table, and she had everybody's respect. And as a result, she was the person in the room who brought that other perspective. She was the one in the room who knew the community, including Cobb County, more than men who had been in corporate offices. That's a totally different level of experiencing life. So that she was the reality check for them, and they respected her. And for the most part, I think they listened to her and took her advice.
The meetings were having an effect. Here is Pat and John Ivan.
And we kept meeting with Shirley. She arranged a place in a building that wasn't theirs. And we did that. You remember arranging how we were going to sit?
Yeah, before she controlled the room. And they controlled the time by being late. Do you remember that?
Yes.
All of it.
Yeah. They made a mistake. Shirley wasn't just Shirley. She was former mayor of Atlanta, Shirley Franklin. And I already knew her, but we met every week for 6 weeks.
We knew who Shirley Franklin was. She was smart. She was intelligent. And maybe sometimes she gave us enough information just to keep us coming back. But whatever it was, it worked. We actually ended up having 7 meetings. The last meeting, we did go to ACOG, because that's when they told us things were moving in our direction and then just to watch.
And there was one meeting when she said, well, we haven't decided about the volleyball venue.
And we almost broke each other's hands under the table.
The pressure had become too much. The Olympics were moved out of Cobb County.
I was blown out of my mind. And the thing is, we got a brick in the Olympics, don't we? We got that Olympics out of Cobb damn brick in that damn section, don't we?
That was fabulous. We became their worst enemy. Queers in their face tell the Olympic Committee what they needed to do, what they were going to do, or they would have a consequence. Maybe not Shirley. Shirley seemed more comfortable, much more comfortable. But I think we were their worst nightmare. In their face, on TV, in the newspapers, on the street, the letters that came in, queers saying, you're going to do the right thing or there will be consequences for you.
Lynn May, ACOG's media director.
I believe that the resolution and the decision to move the venue out of Cobb County was a result of the pressure from the IOC through Greg Louganis and other gay and lesbian athletes who began to speak up. And I think that the media storm we created here, some of which was the committee's own making, exerted such pressure that it made us look anti-liberal, not open. And I think that the Olympic Committee rightly bowed to a combination of pressures in an effort to look good and be good. I don't think it has anything to do with any moral change or any epiphany. I think people do what is in their own best interest. And that's what I think the Olympic Committee did. It became in its own best interest after a combination of time, pressure, and bad writing to make a different decision than the one they had initially made. But I would always be hesitant to speak to any moral conversion on behalf of an organization or an individual. Who knows what goes on in people's hearts? And in the end, what does it matter as long as they do the right thing?
But there wasn't much time for celebrating. Early 1996, and preparations for the games were nearly complete. Just the torch relay, the symbolic journey the Olympic flame makes to the host city. It's carried by the great and good across the host nation. And despite everything, the flame would still pass through Cobb County. But John Ivan and Pat weren't going to allow that.
Some people inside of the Olympic Committee called us and told us, and they were going through Cobb County. And that, you know, it's just like a bully you beat out in the street. Then you go in the alley and they grab you by the throat and push you to your knees. And they didn't say it, but there were people who started calling us saying they would put out the torch.
Remember Coca-Cola was a sponsor? And I got in touch with the... the women, the drag queens.
The Sisters of Perpetual
Indulgence. And they told me when that torch relay, which would start in San Diego and meander around the whole country, came through San Francisco, they would extinguish the torch with Pepsi. They would pour Coca-Cola into the streets, and they would extinguish that torch. And I asked one of them, her name was Sister All of a Sudden, please call ACOG and tell them what you're willing to do, but do not threaten them. And she did. She called Shirley and told her.
They made us fight them again. Yeah, it was so hurtful because it was sneaky.
Yeah, it was because we had trusted them. And the torch is the symbol of the Olympics. And to go to pass through Cobb County after that had happened, it was against everything I believed in. And it was something, I remember Shirley Franklin said to me one time in a meeting, because I had lunch with her, I couldn't let it go. It had to be done. And she said to me, she said, you started this, you have to be there until it's finished. I was going to be anyway.
Hey, John, do you remember the song that you guys sang about Billy Payne?
No, Billy Payne, what will you claim? How will the warrior
international shame? Something like that.
Yeah. Don't take the torch into Cobb County. Keep the flame away
from shame.
And so once again, the Olympics had been removed from Cobb County. And I competed in the volleyball, hosted at the University of Georgia in the city of Athens. I fulfilled my Olympic dream without fear and knowing I was welcome.
but the effects of the campaign have lingered for those who fought so hard, like Pat Hussein.
They broke my heart, and I didn't expect that. I still can't go in Cobb County.
No.
I can't tell you how much I cried and still do. It hurt me really bad. And I was wanted to be mad because the bullies hurt me so bad. And it started when we saw the torch relay. It was coming, and there were all these people following a torchbearer. And they were so happy and laughing and jumping around and enjoying it. And it was something about the ugliness that lived in it. And I start crying. We got off the interstate, and Cherry said after a while, "What's the matter?" And I couldn't talk. And it has been a struggle from then till now. And I made a pact with myself when I start crying that day that I would never hide my tears, because they're for a reason. Oh. It's like lava. It flows and then hardens. But it is what it is. And whatever other people think of it, I know how I earned it. And I hope one day it'll leave me.
In the years since those games, gay rights have progressed. But how much further is there still to go? Here are the thoughts of campaigner John Greaves, Lynn May, and first, Pat Hussein.
As far as we have come, we are now at a place where that pushback, and there is a part of me that gives a tired sigh and said, we already did this. How is this happening? And some people just didn't get the memo, and there's a way that's still being thought by many people or people in power that have been there maybe for too long, that your controls, what you think is good for society, may not be good for individuals. And it's a sad feeling. I don't intend to take sitting down any of the regressions. And I've got a long way to go back. I mean, we started getting dumped out of boats and chains. So that survivability, that will to live by somebody. And I just want to do, like I've told so many people, what I can. I can't do that on the street now. I don't believe. I won't. but I can talk and I can write. But it's so disheartening to see it happen, like a big eraser.
We have this culture war going on. It kind of ebbs and flows. It feels like in recent years that we've gone backwards some, that we've lost gains. It seems like we go through periods where one side has more fervor than the other. And, you know, instead of this linear straight line advancement of civilization, it's this up and down graph. You know, we have peaks and valleys and peaks and valleys. But if you put a median line through it, things are improving. I just wish we didn't do three steps forward and two steps back. If you ever look at somebody walking backwards, it looks very awkward. It's very unnatural for people to walk backwards or go backwards. There's this idea that we'll fight and we'll win over people's hearts and minds, and someday the fight will be over. Yeah, I've come to realize you don't end racism, you don't end homophobia. Every generation, there's some new people being taught those hatreds, and it's a never-ending fight.
What I feel, thinking about it now, looking back three decades, is that I feel we haven't made as much progress as we should have made by this time. That I would love to think that seems like ancient history. How could we ever have behaved that way? We're still fighting and dealing with versions of this all over the world. Look at what policy some African countries are making regarding gay people. This is a story that's relevant today. Somebody else can protest in some other Olympic Games. This isn't just about the Olympic Games. This is about how we as human beings treat each other. And the policies that grow out of our attitudes that are sometimes not based in reality, they're not based in science, they are sometimes based in a kind of irrational thinking. I would love for this not to be an issue now. I am disappointed that it still is. That would be my final word. I can't believe that we could still be talking about this in so many other venues, so many other situations. It's discouraging. Is it, you know, what kind of world do you want? You know, what kind of world are we trying to accomplish here? What kind of world are you trying to create?
So how can you affect real change? Here's Diego, Pat, and John Greaves.
I remember the time when all this happened. It was perceived that it was okay for us not to have our rights, that it was kind of audacious for us to even say we need to be respected, we need to be treated as people. And I think the stand that Pat and John took,
and all of us,
the others, sent the message that no, it's not okay to discriminate. It's our rights. You know, I got a feeling from some of the people, that some of the more timid types, that, well, you know, if you're going to get your rights, you have to ask nicely, kind of attitude.
And wait.
I said, no, wait a minute. This is my rights. I don't have to ask for them. But you cannot give them to me like a gift, because there are rights. And I think the stand that Olympia Sarkov took sent a message that we are just not going to come here hand in hand begging, we're going to demand what is ours.
I feel like to make real change in our country and to solve, to make real progress, is solving our country's problems. So much of it is just people spouting a few words back and forth and reducing some very complex, nuanced problems and issues to little sound bites that don't capture it. And then we're forced to take the people who want us to take a side. You know, we've got red states and blue states and liberals and conservatives. And you have to tell people which one you're. And all that to me seems really counterproductive and not good for society. I think that we're social animals. We need each other. And we need to build relationships. And that's the way to create real change is you talk to people and you build a relationship and you trust each other so you can have real conversations about the issues and not be afraid that you are going to say something offensive or, you know, so if you hide what you really think because you're afraid of offending people, what's the worth of that conversation?
People that are thinking of engaging in something now, don't think you have to do what we did. There were many people who have come up to me with various struggles and apologized for not being involved. And I said, there's no need to apologize. All I ask of you is to do what you can. What you can. I don't know what that is, but you do.
Yeah.
Do it.
Anyone who wrote a letter, made a phone call, came to a protest, who said this was wrong, they contributed to that happening.
Today, the Cobb County Commission is made up of 5 women, 3 of whom are Black, including its chair, Lisa Cupid. We played Lisa some of the archive of her predecessor, Gordon Wison.
Homosexuality is basically amoral in every society that we know of from recorded history forward. There hasn't been any society that's adopted and endorsed homosexuality as a normal practice.
It's interesting to hear his voice, but I'm sure it was not welcomed by many who are part of this community to believe that someone here in leadership would say that publicly, let alone put policy behind it. I would like to think that we are a different place now than we were then, and that the leadership in place wouldn't do something that would make members of our community feel ostracized. You know, to make a public statement or resolution requires a majority of our board. And as much as I know that Cobb County has moved forward, I think that saying we're moved forward as a county is one thing, being able to publicly declare it is something different. And so each commissioner might have to reflect upon her own heart to see where she may fit in making that kind of declaration.
So no plans yet for a formal resolution of apology from the Board of Commissioners of Cobb County.
excellence, respect, and friendship. The Olympic ideals. It's worth remembering they don't come easy, but they are certainly worth fighting for.
Take me to Atlanta, where the beech trees grow. Take me to Atlanta, down in Georgia Road.
I'm very thankful for them for fighting to get the Olympics out of Cobb so that athletes like myself could enjoy the Olympics and feel stress-free, because I don't think I would want to play in a place where I'm openly hated for just being me. I would thank them for going to fight for us, for all of us, and it's inspiring and seriously brave to go out and fight this fight, because it would have an effect on them day-to-day life, financially, out on the street. Unfortunately, we're still dealing with it today, and I hope that this story, this documentary, inspires to stand up and vocalize and use their platform. I feel very privileged in the life that I live, and I'm thankful for those that came before me so that I can live this life. But I worry that these haters are... Some days I worry that they're actually going to win.
Take me to Atlanta, further down the line. Take me to Atlanta, further down the line.
You've been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back, and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik, Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about Unexpected Science History.
Well, that's unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.